Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in. Well, it's via the audio streaming medium wave 15480 satellite Islam, and we've got brilliant weather on our side of the world. Looking out at the studios, Radio Islam, brilliant blue skies, and we've been truly blessed. We've had some wonderful weather for the last couple of days. Early mornings and late evenings still very chilly, but otherwise it warms up superbly, and we have temperatures reaching up to about 24-25, and we really truly grateful. You know, we are truly blessed, and for that we have to give thanks. And this morning we have got a wonderful guest, and that is Andrea. Now, Andrea is no stranger to Islam. I think she's got green blood running through her body. You know, whenever you talk about Andrea, she's got so much to tell and so much to share, and she's got so much to give also. We are truly, truly blessed. And Andrea has got, you know, if we go through to see what she has done and what she's currently doing, you definitely would agree with me that she is a remarkable woman, sharing so much with us. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Andrea. Many thanks for your kind words. My word.
Yes, I wasn't too sure whether it was green blood or not, and Mohammed looked up and said, wow, are we talking to an alien this morning? I said, definitely not an alien, because I looked in his eyes and he was going to pop out. I said, no, we're still calling into South Africa, not beyond the bounds of our planet Earth, but definitely someone who is very
well,
truly...
Well, fortunately, this is radio, and you can't see my antennae.
Well, thank you very much for this. Now, Andrea, when we talk about, you know, you're truly being, you know, inspirational and wanting to do and wanting to change so many things. Now, you've told us about this in the past. Maybe just to reflect a little bit, you know, you've come in from and you're still doing some wonderful work. Tell us about some of the work that you are doing.
Well, you know, I have always loved plants, especially our local indigenous South African plants. It's a fascinating field. We have over 35,000 species. But, you know, I'm not a purist in any sense of the word, because the whole plant kingdom is just amazing, and it has so much to offer us as human beings. A lot of people don't realize the value that plants add to our lives, the value of actually working with plants and what it can actually do for you as a person. And a lot of people think of it as conservation and, you know, making oxygen for who knows who, maybe you, if you're lucky. But actually plants have so much to offer. They give us joy, they give us food, and they give us medicine. And in fact, many of the medicines even that you buy in the pharmacy are copies of things that were made from plants in times gone by. So yes, it's a wonderful symbiotic relationship that we have with the plant kingdom. And everything I do is about that. I write sometimes for the Gardener magazine, mainly on indigenous plants. That's my brief there. But I really feel very strongly also about other uses of plants that we can apply in our own homes and gardens to make our lives easier and also to be better for the planet.
Thank you very much for that, you know, and while talking about biodiversity and saying, while you're not a purist, I know that we are very fortunate that they say amongst the countries in the world, we seem to be the third most, you know, sort of biodiversity, where we have, you know, rankings about third, because that's how much we have, you know, that all we have in this little country called South Africa.
It's absolutely incredible. We really are, we have a wealth here around us, and it's a matter of learning how to use it, much in the way that we have learned over the millennia to harvest, to make use of plants from the cradle of civilization, which was Tanzania. Most of the grains and the products that we subsist on now come from there. Of course, South America was also developing in parallel with crops that we eat today, like potatoes. And these have all been very well researched and are widely used and have been improved. And I think that there's a lot of attention that can still be given to the uses of South African plants and also working on them to make them into more viable commercial crops.
Yes, I think there's lots of that going on, and there's only one, you know, fear that we have, that whilst we're working on them, somebody comes and claims them and say, well, they're not yours any longer. We're going to patent them, and we've had lots of issues around maybe our rooibos tea and our certain other plants. I think we've got through that. Now, Andrea, you know, and I think one thing that you spoke about that's so important is the joy that plants bring us, the joy that works, you know, that work in our gardens. Now, we know that gardens are those sacred spaces where you can go in there, you can contemplate, you can think, and, you know, you have just yourself and the earth, and whilst you're taking your hands and, you know, putting it into the sand and the joy that it gets when you see the sand coming through, or when you see the pines bursting, or you see your seedling coming through. I think those are all the joys. Tell us about some of those things, and how therapeutic is all of that?
It's so exciting for any human being. I mean, with, despite 22 years in horticulture, every time I take a handful of seeds, I look at them and I go, oh, come on. And then you sow them and you look after them, and the next thing the plants come up. And it's a little miracle every time. It's so exciting. And this is an exciting time of the year, because although, yes, as you mentioned earlier, the mornings and the evenings are still very cold and parts of the country will still be experiencing frost, it really is spring. And things are just bursting into life. And I think anybody, any listener who just takes a little walk outside now is going to start seeing the signs of spring. And that just makes us feel so lively and so full of joy. And you were telling me, I believe we were chatting yesterday, that your peach trees are flowering now.
Yes, we have a lot of, you know, in the neighborhood, so as we were driving out the other day, and I said, well, what's all this beautiful, you know, when you see the pink blooms coming through and you look around, you say definitely the peach trees and the apricot trees are already bursting. We've got the star jasmine that's already flowering. I've had some people calling and said, well, the roses are already budding, but they haven't even done pruning yet. So, you know, we've had, and again, Andrea, our part of the world where we are with, I'm not sure, and your part as well in the Cape, is that, you know, it's been the warmest July in many years, and whilst you said the warmest, I know the evenings and then mornings have been very cold, but the day temperatures have shot up, so the ground is getting warmer and all of the things suddenly happening around you, and you say, well, fine, one side it seems to be winter, are we still going to get the cold, and now we're having all these beautiful blooms, and there seems to be some sort of cross, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but in terms of cross messages going through. It's warm enough in the day, but it's cold at night, and so the plants are not too sure, and you suddenly find all these beautiful blooms coming up.
Yes, but it really is an exciting time of the year. Look, we're going into August. It's number one sowing season. If you're in an area where you still experience frost, I would advise that you start some of your summer crops early undercover, because you'll just get so much more of a good head start. But just returning to therapeutic, I know for a fact that they have used plants in helping deeply disturbed people, people who have experienced traumas, people who have mental illnesses and so on, where they really actually become so much calmer and so much happier when they get given the opportunity to grow plants. So, yes, for a normal person, it's a wonderful lift of the spirit, but it's also wonderful to know that it can help these deeply troubled people to just get in touch with the earth and do a bit of gardening under the sky, under the sunshine. It's a really wonderful activity to be taking part in. And yes, as you say, it's the betweeny season. We're not quite sure what's going to happen now. It might still be a cold snap, but it really is spring.
And when you talk about, you know, getting people to work with it and they find it to be therapeutic, I think it's just anyone who's been always the opportunity, who may have lived in a place where she or he was able to garden, and suddenly they find they're living in a flat or a smaller home, or they've had to, you know, move, and you find that that longing is always there, and thereafter you find lots of pots. I've seen people, especially elderly people, you know, pottering around, lots and lots of pots around them, and you wonder why are they doing so many pots, but I think, like you've explained, it's all about the therapy around it, just being able to water, be able to potter around there, just seeing the plants, that makes all the difference.
Absolutely. And of course, it also can, gardening, and even in a small space and in containers, you can even grow some food crops as well, which is very rewarding. You can grow flowers, and it's always lovely to see flowers bursting into bloom. And even if you don't really have an outdoor space where you can put pots or window boxes, you can do, if you've got a sunny windowsill, you can do a lot.
And, the therapy part, I'm just still going, before we conclude in that one, there's so much that, that a garden can offer anyone. Whether it's a small space or a big one, depending on where you're living in, but you still have that opportunity to get into touch with nature, to be able to do these things and come back more being rewarded by it.
Yes, and I think we also have a nurturing need. We need to look after things, you know. I think it's something that's very deep in the human psyche. And especially, you know, elderly people you were talking about, there's a time in life when we begin to become lonely. Our children are out of home. We don't really feel as if we have much that we can contribute or do. And then being able to look after these little plants and so on, that satisfies that need that we have to take care of something.
Definitely, and you know, again, that nurturing need, the need to be able to sow, and so if it's just a small little pot that you have, one or two, it definitely does and help, you know, people get along. Now, the other day, Andrea, I was looking for, at an article that came through, and it was fascinating. You know, it says plants communicate. Now, it was good, I did not have the opportunity of going to the talk, but it was something about plants communicating. Mom was looking at me and said, well, what messages are they sending? But plants will communicate, and I thought it was a wonderful message. And, you know, scientists are now saying that plants are able to send messages to other plants, and they've given this, they've cited an example of how they do it out in the wild. Did you come across some of those articles?
Well, this has actually been going on for quite a long time. I think already in the 80s, they discovered that when they kept buck in enclosures, I'm talking about wild buck in enclosures. Now, these are browsers. They eat off of trees. And they found that these animals were living in the midst of what appeared to be plentiful food supplies, and they were dying of starvation. And they had to investigate, how can this be in the midst of all this wealth of food? Why are these buck dying? And they discovered that what happens is, as soon as a buck begins to nibble on a tree, all the other trees in the area begin to produce tannins, as well as the tree that the buck is browsing off of. Now, tannins is obviously what you get in tea. It's a bitter substance. It doesn't taste very nice. And one of the things that it does is it actually preserves the food. So if you're a buck and you eat leaves that are full of tannins, you're unable to digest them properly. And what was actually happening was, the moment a buck started to nibble on a tree, all the trees within a certain radius would go, there's something dangerous going on, and they would start producing these tannins. Now, in a natural environment, buck roam very large areas, so they could just move on until they found something that tasted nicer and that tasted sweeter. But this reaction was very quick, and it was happening over an area that was the size of the camps that they were keeping these animals in. And that's when they realized they actually need a much bigger range space, because the plants were actually sending out distress signals. They found something similar in the tobacco plant, which naturally grows in American deserts. And there's a specific worm that attacks it. And the plant actually produces nicotine as a defense against this insect. And it increases this as soon as it starts to get eaten. And all the plants around it do the same thing. And there's a sort of mass die-off of all the pests that are attacking them. So they clearly do communicate. People are uncertain how they do it, whether they do it through chemicals that travel through the soil, whether it's some sort of a thing that travels through the air. Nobody knows quite how they do it. I don't know if they've made any progress on that with new research. But as far as I know, that's as far as they've got. They know it happens. They just don't know how it happens.
Well, I thought there was a fascinating study coming through, because, you know, you always say, well, fine, can they communicate, do have this feeling? And, of course, I'm going to go to that, you know, that's a universal joke that, you know, people always say, hug a tree. And really they say, if you do hug these trees and you do show them, and people actually say that they can talk to them, and when they talk to them, they bloom better. They seem to be, you know, giving better flowers, better buds, better fruits, better vegetables. So you have people who really go out there and talk to them and say, well, we can communicate to them, and they do understand.
There are definitely also some research to back that up, that plants that, they even discovered that if you touch seedlings, obviously not too small seedlings, they tend to grow more strongly. So whether it's the actual physical contact, whether there's some sort of energy passing between you and the plant, is unknown, but they do say that it does help. Talking, there's some people who believe that when you speak to a plant, and this would actually... If it is so, it would be backed up by science. Plants during the day, as we know, absorb carbon dioxide. And they say that if you get up close to a plant and you talk to it, you're actually releasing extra carbon dioxide onto the leaves, which the plant then absorbs and turns into biomass. But that one is not yet scientifically proven, as far as I know.
Well, so the next time you see someone talking or chatting to the plant or hugging the plant, don't look at them in disdain or in scorn at them. They're just doing what's natural. And I think Mohammed's having a good laugh this morning. Say, well, You definitely won't find me hugging a tree or hugging a bush, because I don't want to be, but I think people do that, and I've seen some people actually checking to the door, you know, to the plants and coming in and, you know, greeting them. And so, you know, the next time you do see that, don't think they're a bit on the other side. Maybe look at the plant and see how well they're blooming and say, well, perhaps that's what I should be doing to my plants.
Well, I will tell you the honest truth, I'm not a very good communicator when it comes to plants. And normally what I do is, look, it's wonderful most of the time, one is successful if one does one's homework, but sometimes things go wrong, and there have been times that I've looked at them and gone, come right, it's compost time.
Oh, so you're more in the scolding mood than on the chatting mood. You wouldn't be singing to them, you'd be scolding them.
I was threatening them, yes. Sometimes it works.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, you know, the other thing that's become very, very prevalent at this time and has been coming, and trends have shown that, and we looked at Chelsea and we're now looking at our South African show garden, our garden centres and so forth, is about food security. Food security has become a very, very important function for a number of reasons, and, you know, it may be for, you know, economical reasons, maybe for health reasons. People want to know exactly what they're absorbing, what they're eating, what's going on. Mm. And I've just got something I want to share, which is, imagine looking out of your window to see beds bursting with red ripe tomatoes, stumbling coarse squash, and multicolored array of crisp salad and greens. The possibilities of growing your own fresh, flavorful produce are endless, no matter how limited your space or level of experience. Yes, it's true, more and more people around the world are turning small spaces in their backyards, on the balconies, into protective food and flavor sources. And the question that's been put, would you love to become one of them? Would you love to harvest tons of zucchini, armful of herbs, baskets of strawberries, all from your own backyard? That sounds exciting and enticing. Now, you know, that is the food security comes to the fore. And, you know, the two reasons, whether it's economic or whether you want it to. Tell us about those trends, because people are saying, I want to, but I don't have green fingers. I want to, I don't think I can do it. I've got very limited space. Tell us about some of these things. And then we should, you know, I think we go through some of the steps, how we can do some of these things.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a big mouthful. Okay, let's start with green fingers. Green fingers is a myth. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as green fingers. What there is self-discipline. Mm-hmm. Remembering to take care of your plant. Your plant needs a few basic things. It needs soil, it needs light, it needs air, and it needs minerals that it absorbs from the soil. And if you provide all of those things, the plant will grow. There is no such thing as green fingers. What there is doing your homework and knowing what you need to do and scheduling. And there's also a little bit of trial and error. If at first you don't succeed, try and work out what you did wrong and try again. And you just get better and better at it as time goes on. I was inclined to especially love plants to death at one point. I was a terrible overwaterer, and I had to learn not to overwater my plants. But I will say that most people have a problem with underwatering in this country. We tend to forget to look after our little plants a little more carefully than we look after bigger, well-grown plants. So do your homework. There's no such thing as green fingers. Anyone can grow plants. You just need to know more or less what you're doing. And then the other problem of small space. Well, lately there's been a major trend towards what they call vertical gardening. And I've actually seen some very successful vertical gardens. In fact, there's a very famous restaurant in Europe somewhere, I forget the name, where they have actually built a restaurant with all the walls being this vertical garden of herbs and vegetables and fruits like strawberries that grow very well in a vertical sort of situation. And it looks gorgeous. And they actually harvest the produce for the restaurant from these vertical walls. So yes, you can do a lot with a very, very small space. When it comes to vertical gardens, a lot of ingenuity has been used. I've seen so many different versions, ranging from a very simple one where 2 liter cool drink bottles are cut to make a little sort of a pot that can be hung from a steel frame or a wooden frame, and some holes in the bottom, obviously, for drainage, and a little piece of guttering at the bottom to catch anything that falls out. That was the simplest system that I ever saw. But you also get some very complicated systems that, you know, if you've got the money and you feel like it, you can invest in, where they have pumps and things get recirculated and so on. But even on a simple basis, I've seen things built from, you know, these pallets that they use for transporting things, these wooden pallets.
That's right.
I've seen people turning those into vertical gardens. I've seen people taking fabrics and making fabric pockets, which are going onto a frame, and that becomes a vertical garden. So as soon as you can go up, you can use a lot of, you can get a lot more out of your space. Urban farming is becoming enormous in certain countries. I know the US is quite big, where communities that do not normally have access to space are making use of rooftops and so on to grow vegetables, and you can actually do quite intensive stuff. Obviously, if your space is limited, you might have difficulty with some crops, like, for example, pumpkins need lots and lots of space. Yes, you can actually do a real lot of things with a limited space and more compact plants, like, for example, your butter lettuces and so on, spinach. And these are all wonderful things that are best picked fresh out of your own garden, and then they load it with all the healthy things. As soon as something is picked from a farm and cold stored and transported to supermarket, you're losing a lot of those brilliant nutrients. Fresh out of your garden is the best way to go.
Sorry about that. And they said, the article goes on to say that, you know, the small door-sized food garden can supply a family of four with all the herbicide and pesticide-free salad and greens they need, and it's far easier to imagine. Can you imagine? It's like, if you like the idea of better nutrition for your family, then, you know, this is the way to go. Now, you've just said that, you know, with, when you take things, you know, into cold storage and installed and brought out, by then lots of nutrients get lost along the way. And you've also said something that was so important, that many of us are guilty of underwatering. And I've also noted something else, you know, feeding. I've heard so many people in the program coming and said, I've got a tree here, but I've never fed it. Or I've got something I've never ever thought about feeding. And I think those are two of the watch points that many gardeners, when they start out, don't understand the importance.
Well, this is it. And your soil preparation is 90% of your success, no matter where you live. Look, our indigenous plants can tolerate poor soils because that's what they're used to. But when we start looking at food crops that come from places that were originally rich river valleys with fresh silt being deposited every year, we're really looking at things that need a bit more nutrition and need a bit more care. So your soil prep is absolutely essential.
So the first thing that we'd look at is, before we go on to and we discuss, you know, the watering and feeding, is to look at soil preparation. I think that's very, very critical. But Andrea, it's time for us to break for the news. When you come back, we'll continue with these conversations.
Fantastic. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Doc.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree." So join Ismail Pariyava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Pariyava. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Midway 1548 Satellite Islam. Remember, you could join our conversation at time. The number to dial this morning, 854-1548. If you have any particular questions you'd like to, and you'd like to send on 0734613014, 0734613014. You could send us SMSs on that particular number. And remember that if it's something that we cannot answer this week, we'll try and get an answer for you during the course of the following programs. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest online with us, and that's Andrea. And Andrea is very passionate. She's been in the industry. She writes well for magazines. And she is gardening herself. So someone who's really giving us wonderful advice. And we're looking at food security this morning. What should be done at this particular time of the year. And I think the first point that everyone needs to understand is soil preparation. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning again. And good morning to you at home listening. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you very much. Before we go on, Andrea, what part of the world are you in? Tell us about the weather on that side.
Well, I'm here in the beautiful Southern Cape. I'm in a country area surrounded by nature reserves, Wilderness National Park are my neighbors in front and behind me. We have had, this morning I woke up to the most beautiful sound in the moments long before dawn. I heard the soft, gentle rain on the roof, and it's so exciting. I'm going to go and look and see if my seeds have germinated.
Well, fantastic. So you're on that part of the world. And, you know, being the long weekend, you have lots of gate crashes into your privacy.
We welcome tourists as long as they bring it.
Well, as long as they bring the hard-earned things that we require, not a problem, Andrea.
Andrea, well, you know, over here, people are very dependent on tourism.
Andrea, we're talking about food, sorry, beg your pardon, soil preparation, and we said, well, you know, that is so important. Tell us about soil preparation. Now, many of our listeners may be novice and say, well, what's soil preparation? It's just the soil you get in your garden, is it good enough? You know, that brownish one? Oh, no, that's not good enough. Tell us about soil preparation.
Well, the important thing to remember if you're a South African is that your soil is poor. Chances are 90% that your soil is too poor for the kind of foods that you want to grow if you want to get a good yield. Now, there's always more than one way to do things, and sometimes you can get away with minimal soil preparation, but you're never going to get best results. So I always say the first step to success for any gardener is your soil preparation. There's lots of different approaches to it, but I still subscribe very much to the idea that any soil, whether it be clay, whether it be sand, even whether it be loam, will benefit from compost. Compost has several functions in the soil. The most important one is that it changes the structure of the soil. If you have a sandy soil, it tends to dry out much too quickly, and that's not good for you. And it's also very poor in nutrients. A clay soil is able to hold nutrients a little bit better, but it doesn't drain very well. It tends to hold water, it's hard, it's soggy, and quite often it's stony. So, in other words, you need to do something to your soil if you want to make it hospitable for those lovely little seedlings that you're going to make yourself. And the best way to do that, or the six-pack that you're going to buy from the garden center. But the main thing is that you need to prepare your soil. And this is where many gardeners take shortcuts. I'll confess there are times when I take shortcuts too. But the high road is to double trench when you're growing vegetables. Now, what that means is you dig down to about 2 spades depth, a trench, and then you take the sand or the soil to the other side of the bed, the place where you're going to end, and then you dig through, and throw the soil back into that first trench that you created. So you're digging to the same depth, throwing the soil in. As you throw the soil in, you're adding one spade full of compost for every 3 spades full of soil that you make use of. As a general rule of thumb, some soils could benefit from a little bit more compost. Other soils might need a little bit less. But rule of thumb is 1 spade of compost for every 3 spades of soil. And you mix that into that first trench that you dug, and you move on. Now you've got a new trench, you dig again. And you go 2 spades deep, you throw the soil in, you mix the compost. So that way you've got a nice, light, well-drained soil, and it's all ready for your vegetables. Some people like to dig in a little bit of manure. If you're digging in manure, that's great, it's fantastic, but make sure that it's old. It must be old. There must be no smell to it. It must be 100% dry, and you might want to water your soil just to wash out any excess salts with a sprinkler or something before you actually get around to planting. That's the traditional way. I like it. It works. But the other ways of doing it as well, and I quite like these ways. The traditional way of vegetable gardening is to make your food garden all in one place. But you can actually plant your vegetables in among your flowers. Why not? Some of them are really beautiful. There's some nice bright red leaves. I can get these red spinaches. I mean, it can look so stunning in among your flower beds. Carrots, ordinary carrots, are fantastic as an edging for flower beds. And in that case, you'll obviously do your soil preparation on a similar concept, shall we say, but on a much smaller scale. If you're only going to plant one spinach plant in among your other flowers, you'll just prepare a little hole and make sure that there's some nice compost mixed in there and it's sort of got a little bit of depth, and then use that. So there's loads of ways of doing it. But yes, composting is very, very important. And then for nutrition, you can use chemical fertilizers. Do be cautious because they can burn. Or you can use organic fertilizers. Just be very careful. Read what the people are saying. go to your Life is a Garden local accredited retailer and ask them about the products that they have if they want, if you want to buy something in. But a little bit of extra nutrition in the soil is good. I generally find, though, that with seedlings, if you're planning to grow things from seed, I don't usually add anything when I'm digging over. What I usually do is I germinate the seed on that, and then after that I do some kind of liquid feeding. Liquid feeding has the advantage that it can't burn easily, so your little delicate plants can't now hit a grain of fertilizer and burn or something like that. And the food is also immediately available to the plants. So, yes, definitely many more than one way of doing things, but compost to me is the key. And everybody has organic waste in their gardens. So if you're on a very small scale, consider maybe building or getting a compost bin. Otherwise, there's ways of doing heaps if you get lots of garden rubbish, but you do need to have a fair-sized heap to generate the kind of heap that you need to break down these things, and you will need to aerate your heap by turning it over, especially after it's rained and so on. But making your own compost, well, why not turn your garden rubbish, your kitchen rubbish, into something that's usable and that's good for your soil and that you can turn into a way of improving your soil to make even more food. So it's almost like a natural cycle in your own household. And you're reducing your rubbish, you're reducing what you're sending to landfills, so it's all good.
You know, would you, just before you go on with turning your garden garbage into black gold, you know, and that's the ideal way of doing it, where you come and you recycle and so forth. Now, the question that comes to mind is, if you have people who have pots, what sort of measurement do they give them? Or, you know, is it 1/3 to 2/3 of the pot with soil and with compost? What type of measurements would you say? What would be sort of the right
way? When it comes to potting media, a lot of people make the mistake of using garden soil. Don't do it. Don't go there. Garden soil is part of a huge system. Soil science is a fascinating study. I had to do 2 years of it and it nearly broke my head. But it's absolutely amazing. There's chemical reactions taking place. There's biological reactions taking place. But it's all taking place as part of a system. As soon as you take soil and you put it in a pot, you're taking it out of the system, you destroy the structure, it is no longer functioning as it should function. Garden soil is actually a no-no when it comes to potting media. I generally say to the home gardener, the easiest solution is just to get a proprietary potting mix, a soilless medium. That's what we use in the trade. That's what as soon as you get into a pot, you can't reuse ordinary soil. Compost, pure compost, tends to be a little bit too rich, and it may also contain pathogens, that is to say plant diseases, because you have had a breakdown process in there. Your temperatures might not have been high enough to destroy pathogens, whereas in these commercial composting operations, they build these huge mountains that actually they have to monitor them to make sure they don't start spontaneously combusting. That's how hot it gets in there. And that heat actually destroys weed seeds, pathogens, and all of those kind of things. In the home garden, very, very difficult to recreate that kind of situation. However, if you do want to try and make your own potting medium, I would say go for something. Well, what we use in the trade mainly is milled composted bark, which I imagine most home gardeners don't really have much access to. But I've got a little secret place. I don't really like taking stuff from there because it's all part of the natural situation. But I've got trees that have been standing there for literally hundreds of years. And they've been dropping their leaves underneath those trees. The plants underneath have been living out their lives for hundreds of years, and I've really actually got this rich, almost peat-like compost that's on top of the soil there. And I mix that then with my garden soil, about a very small amount of garden soil. You want something light and crumbly. But as I say, it's not an ideal situation. Number one, I feel guilty about taking that layer that's built up over the years. And number two, as soon as you use garden soil, you do tend to have structural problems. So the best thing to do is to get a commercial potting medium. It's usually based on composted bark that's been milled very fine, composted till it's black, and you know that at least it doesn't have too many salts. It's safe to use. It's been chemically tested, and it doesn't have pathogens that are going to kill your plants. You can try, but I would recommend rather that you get, for pots, rather go with a commercial potting medium.
Is the statement correct? Turn your kitchen garbage into black gold. Do you think that's true?
Oh, absolutely. And now we're talking compost. Now, compost to me is an additive. It's not something you grow plants in pots in. But it makes wonderful, wonderful enrichment for your soil. So your kitchen garbage is absolutely fantastic for your compost heap. Just remember things like corn cobs and so on, cut them up fine so that they can break up quickly. Otherwise you're going to end up with breaky lumps of things that haven't broken down in your compost. But all those little tomato tops and skins and whatever that you get, potato peels, a little bit dicey. You can get away with it, but there is a risk of obviously getting nematodes in your compost heap. But I mean, ultimately, if you don't have compost that you made, what are you going to do? You're going to go and buy compost. And if you don't buy compost, you're not going to succeed with your vegetables. So, obviously, it's money. It's money in the bank. It's money in your pocket. Just the same as growing your own food is a huge saving for you in your own household budget.
Question coming through on your existing plants. How do you dig a trench, or how do you put compost between them?
Your existing plants.
You know, it says onion.
Obviously, you don't want to disturb the roots. So what I like to do with my existing beds, and especially perennials and so on, is to just put a layer of compost on top and lightly, very lightly, just work it in slightly with the fork. Remember to follow up for weeds, because as soon as you disturb soil, you're turning up weed seeds and they're probably going to grow weeds. Another way of doing it is just keep your beds well mulched. If you start mulching your beds now, over the years, you will gradually these things will break down. They will go down into your soil naturally, and you get a much richer, softer soil. But if you need to compost in between your beds, I would say put the compost on top and then just scratch it in lightly in between your plants.
Okay, so we've got that one. We have another question, not specifically to food security. It says, I want to make a pathway with wood and crushed stones. Please advise.
Oh, you can be very creative there, have lots of fun. Obviously, you have to find your wood and your crushed stones first, but I'm assuming you've got a source. Make sure your wood is treated if you do want your pathway to last a few years. I have seen very nice ones done with untreated pine rings and so on, but obviously at some point that will need replacing. And then you can almost use the Eastern philosophy, which is to make your pathway something interesting. So make a little pattern out of your wood, and then put some crushed stones and a pattern out of your wood and then some crushed stones. It can be lots of fun. Or you can use your wood as an edging and your crushed stones as the area that you walk on. Obviously, you're also concerned about weeds. And I'm afraid there I can't really help you much. You could put down plastic just underneath the surface of the soil, but at some point that's going to break down and stop serving its purpose. You will probably have to follow up with some kind of herbicide in between that kind of paving. But that is also true of brick paving and other kinds of paving.
Thank you very much for that one. And do we now move on to, we've looked at our soil and we know that soil is a very important soil preparation. Now, what choice do we have with regards to plants at this particular time of the year? Is it too soon to start sourcing plant material, or should we wait a little bit later for it to warm up?
Well, I say this is an extremely exciting time of the year when it comes to your veggie garden in particular. This is the sowing time for your summer vegetables, and particularly if you want to grow pumpkins, squashes, any of that sort of family of plants, because the earlier you sow them, the less chance you have to be affected by things like fire, which destroys these things if you sow them too late in the season. So even if you're in a frosty area, I would recommend that you sow your pumpkins now, but don't, if you're in a frosty area, rather sow them in little pots. You can use quite a small pot, because theoretically your frosty risk is getting lower with every passing week. So you just need to get your seeds germinated and you need to get them going. If you're in a frost-free area, go for it. This is the time. Pumpkins, squashes, I have had particular success with gem squash. So easy to grow and a little bit more compact than pumpkins, because you know pumpkins do take over a big space. If you don't have that kind of space, maybe try with gem squash instead. But basically all your summer vegetables now. Now's the time we're moving away from the cold season crops. The only things you're not going to do are things that require cold weather. So that's, for example, most of your cabbages, broccolis and so on. You can do cabbage, but it's a bit risky, because if the weather gets hot, your little plants might, instead of making a head, a proper cabbage head, they might just go straight into flower. Your lettuce, don't grow head lettuce at this time of the year. Again, the same thing. the plant says the weather is hot, and instead of making a head, it goes straight into flower. So the thing that you want to sow if you want lettuce for your summer salads is your butter lettuces, and that's so lovely. I mean, they're so pretty. You've got the red frilly ones, you've got the green ones with the round leaves. Very, very nice for mixing into your flower garden, which I also like, by the way, because if you do get pests and you've got your food plants sort of dotted around, you're less likely to have an absolute disaster. But now is the time. Eggplant, if you want to have eggplant, sow it now, because later on you're going to have problems with fruit fly. Of course, the year-round things, or pretty much year-round things, you normally stay away from in June, July because of the very cold weather. But your things like your Swiss chard, your spinach and so on, you can start sowing again now. Onions, you can do, no problem. Peas, it's getting a bit late for peas. If you still want to get peas, do it now, because otherwise you're going to have problems with downy mildew and so on later in the season. Your peppers, and aren't peppers marvelous in your cooking? I'm talking about the hot ones. I'm talking about the sweet ones. This is the time to sow. If you're in a frosty area, again, start with them in pots so that you get an early harvest. Otherwise, wait until the danger of frost is over. But it's usually possible to find a little spot outside that's quite protected. Under the shade of a tree or something like that, fantastic place to germinate your seed. And don't be scared of seed. People are scared of seed. Don't be scared of seed. It's easy. It's a lot of fun. If you have fine seeds, my rule of thumb is fine seeds, your better chance is to sow them in trays. And this is usually leaf crops and fruit crops. Your root crops, you always sow where they're going to grow, because if you damage that little root during transplanting, you've damaged your crop. So sow your things like your beetroots and your carrots and so on exactly where they are to grow, so that you don't get funny-shaped roots. But your other things, if it's a big seed, you can probably get away with sowing it in the ground. But the main problem with seeds is if they, through watering or something, get too deep, because now you've sown them and you water and the soil moves around, if they get too deep, they're not going to grow. So I find you get better control with your finer seeds in trays, and then from the trays you can transplant them when they're a decent size into the direct into the veggie garden, or if you want to nurse them a little bit more, you can buy at your garden center some of these sort of big trays or packs or whatever, and so and transplant into there. That's another option. Always more than one way of doing things. So, but to me, this is it. This is seed sowing time. And if you want to get early tomatoes, now's the time. Again, frost-free areas, go for it. Sow them where they're going to grow. With your frosty areas, maybe rather grow them in trays and pots until the last disc of frost is over. But you can really, really get started with your veggie garden now. It's an extremely exciting time of the year. Also for your flower garden, if you want to try some flowers from seed. If you don't do it now, next month you can go to your garden center and go buy your 6 or 12 packs.
Thank you very much for that. And the final question is coming through about a peppardew tree. Do you know where it's available, and how do you look after a peppardew?
Oh, peppardew. Peppardews are actually really easy. Now, peppardew is the proprietary name. It's one of those things we were talking about earlier. So, for example, where someone in America tried to make rooibos tea a trademark, which we were all very cross about. But peppardew, the guy, was actually quite creative. But he took a crop that has been around for a long time. And that is a very small kind of bell pepper. Now, your bell peppers are your sweeter peppers, mm-hmm. like, for example, your green peppers, red peppers, yellow peppers that you buy for salads. And you can get small, sweet bell peppers. If you buy anything that's called peppardew, it's going to cost you a lot more because you're working with a proprietary name. It's the same thing. The guy was just really clever. He took an existing crop. He found an exciting way to prepare it. He found a beautiful, mouth-watering name for it, which is admittedly very exciting. But you can do that. If you had fresh peppardews and you've managed to save some seed, now's the time to sow. Once again, not very frost tolerant. So sow them rather in containers if you're in a frosty area. They are easy. They're as easy to grow as chilies. They're as easy to grow as green peps. It's just a matter of sowing your seed, and they don't need anything special. They're incredibly tough. I've had bell pepper plants that have lasted for 2 years. So you get even more than one bearing off of them. After 2 years, my plant still wanted to carry on, but it wasn't very productive, so I got rid of it. But you can harvest the seed from your own plants, which is really cheeky, because then you don't have to buy anything else to replace your crop.
Well,
it's easy. It's very easy. They like warm weather, They like the summer, so start them now in spring.
Well, thank you very much, Andrea. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but you know, it's always an absolute pleasure to be chatting to you. You've got so much to share, and I know that we're going to get back to you in a couple of weeks again to talk about other aspects of gardening. And thanks once again. Enjoy the privacy while you can. Enjoy the you know, the Southern Cape whilst we before we come to invade your privacy. But you take care, and wonderful gardening, and we'll chat to you soon.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. Bye.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye. And there's Edgar Dirim. She's talking to us about food gardening, food security, and she's given us some lovely ideas. And one of the most important is about food preparation, I beg your pardon, soil preparation. So if you are going to do some gardening this year, before you do anything else, make sure that you have the right soil before you pop in any of your seeds. And that is the first watch point that we have for you for this morning. Thereafter, once you go on, there's lots of other things that you've got to look into, look after, and that's, of course, the type of pot that you are going to use, perhaps, or where you are going to plant it. And inshallah, in the coming weeks, we'll talk about, we'll have different guests telling us different, or advising us on different aspects of food security. That's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. We've got a garden club meeting that will be held on the 15th of August at Lifestyle, and there's an exciting speaker. Yes, Tanya Fisser, those of you who have heard her, may have seen her, really exciting to have and to have her chatting to. She's got wonderful ideas. She's the editor of the Garden magazine. And remember, this is open to all, not only to members of the Garden Club, but to anyone. They're all welcome. And for further information, to contact Pam on 011-792-5616. So that's the that's the monthly garden meeting that we held on the 15th of August at Lifestyle. And the speaker, Tanya Fisser, editor of Gardening Magazine. Remember, it's open to everyone, not only to Garden Club members. And for more information, contact Pam on 011-792-5616. And this happens at Lifestyle Garden Center. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.